the Committee on State and Local Government. Today is Thursday, February 13th, 2025, and about 4 minutes late, Senator Klein, so that's pretty good for a Senate committee. Before us today, we have a couple bills. Obviously, these bills have been, well, about as well vetted before they started getting vetted as we really have gotten into this topic pretty heavily over the last couple of years, but I believe this is the first stop you have, Senator Klein. If you could introduce yourself and proceed with your bill, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And if I could start by having an author's amendment adopted by the committee, I would like to have a member offer the A13.
Chair Lang, I would like to move the author's amendment.
Senator Zhang moves the A13 author's amendment. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment passes.
Thank you, members, and Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, thank you so much for your time and attention to Senate File 757, which would legalize mobile sports wagering in the state of Minnesota. I know that this controversial issue has subjected each of you to heavy lobbying, and I thank you as well for the time you have given to advocates on both sides. I thank my co-authors on this bill, Senators Kunisch, Senator French, Senator Pratt, and Senator Coleman. This bill has been before your committee before, and I will try to limit my introduction to an explanation of what is different about the bill from previous iterations. This bill, for the first time, enjoys the support of the previous combatants in this area, the 11 sovereign tribal nations, Canterbury Park, the Allied Charities, and the Minnesota professional sports teams. More importantly, this bill continues to have the support of a majority of Minnesotans in polling. And with the author's amendment that you have just adopted, I have bipartisan support not only from my co-authors and members of this committee, but from Senator Jeremy Miller, who has championed this issue for many years. There are other sports wagering bills before this committee this year. None of them enjoys the support of the coalition I have described. I took this bill 2 years ago in partnership with our Native American tribes to ensure exclusivity over licensure, and that principle is maintained in Senate File 757. Because that exclusivity will impact the business model of our two tracks in Minnesota, we have dedicated 15% of taxed revenues to support their purses and operations. Because we recognize that metropolitan tribal nations will benefit disproportionately from legalized sports wagering, another 15% is apportioned to tribal aid, which will go to rural tribes who profit less from the new activity. Other dedicated purposes for our revenues from a 22% taxation rate are support for our allied charities, such as VFW groups and youth hockey groups, to offset their losses from e-poll tab policy changes, funding for destination sports and events, such as the Olympic trials and the Super Bowl, support for youth in college sports and activities, particularly in underserved communities, and the highest dollar amount in the nation, $6.8 million annually, to support the Department of Human Services to raise awareness of and treat problem gaming. Members, we have learned many lessons from the experience of other states who have already legalized sports wagering, and I thank Senator Marty for highlighting those. If Senate File 757 is enacted, it will be the safest sports wagering bill in the nation. It contains prohibitions on pop-up advertising, prohibitions on advertising at schools and college campuses, a prohibition on college propositional bets, full taxation of provisional bets, the mandatory establishment of self-imposed limits on daily wagering unless waived, a charge to the commissioner to develop methods to identify individuals at highest risk for problem gaming, and a review of best practices from other states to address problem gaming. In addition, one of the most alarming activities identified at Senator Marty's hearing was the practice of targeting vulnerable gamblers with incentives to coax them back into destructive practices. In the author's amendment, we have added language prohibiting targeted incentives unless an individual opts into them. Members, this is the committee of origin for this bill. If it is passed here, it will move on to at least five other committees. However, it is on the members of this committee to judge whether this is momentous policy change is right for the people of Minnesota. To those of you who are deeply concerned about social fallout and family devastation, let me suggest that sports wagering is already flourishing and growing in Minnesota through unregulated offshore platforms with no protections for problem or underage use and no revenues to combat those activities. This bill would address that practice. Other members of the committee have concerns about fairness with the ability to obtain licenses. This bill has answered that concern by providing for the racetracks. For those of you who are concerned about tribal prosperity, this bill is a top priority for our 11 sovereign tribes this year and is the only bill at the Capitol which enjoys their support, all of their support. I believe every member of this committee wishes this bill were different in some ways. I ask you to honor the rare phenomenon of a bill which is supported by all stakeholders and move this bill to its next committee. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Senator Klein. And if we could get started on our list of testifiers, it is rather lengthy. Our first testifier is Bishop Michael Eisen. I hope I said that right, Bishop. If you are on, if you could unmute yourself and begin your testimony. And I would just remind everybody that we are rather time limited today and we have a lengthy list. So keep your testimony short and concise and please begin if you're ready.
Thank you, and you did get my name right, yes. So thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Lang and the members of the committee. My name is Michael Eisen, an auxiliary bishop of the Catholic Church here in the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis. And I'm here on behalf of my brother bishops of the Minnesota Catholic Conference to oppose Senate File 757. Making a 24/7 sports book available on everyone's cell phone will be incredibly harmful to many Minnesotans and will impose costs on our state, and it offers no real social benefit. So we're urging you to vote no on this. Since 2018, when the US Supreme Court made it possible for states to legalize sports gambling, 39 have done so. But some of the biggest states, including Texas and California, have not. And in many of the states where sports gambling is legal, they do not allow online sports gambling, including like Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota. So what is being considered in SF 757 is not whether we can have sports gambling in Minnesota, but whether it will go so far as to enact a bill that ignores the rapidly growing social science data and evidence about why online sports gambling is a predatory industry and will be particularly harmful to young men, those who suffer from addiction, and to families. The evidence includes both the tech industry's ability to manipulate addiction through social media and cell phone usage, along with the studies point in about what is happening in places where sports gambling is legal, including increased partner violence, the redirection of savings to pay gambling debts, massive increases in calls to gambling hotlines, and even increases in suicides. 50% of the profits generated by online sports betting platforms come from 3% of the bettors. So I think for me, that's the most telling statistics. So that means the industry is reliant on the most heavily addicted users for their revenue. I am a sports fan, so I'm also concerned about the integrity of the game, not interested in seeing it grow into a gambling enterprise where there might be an incentive to fix games. For that same reason, along with the intense harassment already experienced by some of our young athletes, which I'm guessing many of you have seen in the news, the NCAA is now advocating for a nationwide ban on in-game prop bets in collegiate sports. I think to the proponent's credit, they are bowing to reality and have preemptively included that provision in SF 757. But the bill still allows both prop bets on pro sports and betting on collegiate sports. In closing, I ask you who benefits from legalizing sports gambling other than the gambling entities and the very privileged few who can absorb the losses that will pile up from this kind of entertainment. Those who do gamble habitually and cannot afford it do not do so without a cost to others. Their behavior affects all those around them, including their families, places of work, and the state as a whole, which has to pick up the tab in the form of bankruptcies and human services spendings. You have a responsibility to protect Minnesotans from predatory industries, which is why we have consumer protection laws. Online gambling is a textbook example of an asymmetry of information and a business model that is designed to zero out the customer by taking advantage of the vulnerable. Again, please vote no. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Bishop. Appreciate the testimony. Next on the list, we have Andy Plato. He is also on Zoom, so if you could unmute and identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. Mr. Plato.
Thank you very much, Lead Lang, Chair Zhang, and members of the committee. My name is Andy Plato, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association, or MIGA. MIGA represents 9 of the 11 federally recognized tribes in Minnesota. On behalf of MIGA tribal leaders, thank you for the opportunity to offer our full support for Senate File 757. The bill before the committee today is largely the product of good faith negotiations with a wide variety of stakeholders and with strong input from the problem gambling community. We are proud to support a bill that provides the strongest levels of consumer protections and highest level of resources dedicated to problem gambling than any sports wagering law in the nation. Tribal leaders are committed to working with the state and stakeholders to bring legal, regulated sports betting options to Minnesota consumers. Today's illicit market only benefits offshore operators who provide no consumer protections nor revenue to address problem gambling. But most importantly to Minnesota tribes, Senate File 757 respects tribal sovereignty and trusts tribes as exclusive license holders. This trust is well placed as tribal gaming in Minnesota for over 30 years has been the most heavily regulated in the state. I'll conclude by mentioning a key equity provision for MIGA, that of the funding of the Tribal Equalization Account. This mechanism ensures all Minnesota tribes will benefit, regardless of their ability to garner mobile market share. Thanks again to Senator Klein, his co-authors, and the committee for its attention to this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Plato, for your testimony. Next on the list, we have Rebecca Delahunt, the Director of Public Policy at the Minnesota Family Council. Good afternoon. If you could identify yourself for the record and yes. Please proceed.
Chair Lang, Senator Klein, and members of the committee, my name is Rebecca Delahunt, and I work as the Director of Public Policy with Minnesota Family Council. Thank you so much for having me today. We oppose the legalization of mobile sports gambling in our state, and we ask you to vote no on 757. A vote in committee is a vote on the bill. Mobile sports gambling poses many social problems where it has been legalized since 2018, and the costs are paid for by families, the state, and faith communities. A study of financial data of 230,000 U.S. households by Kellogg School of Management found that every $1 in sports betting reduced household net investments by about $1. Researchers from the University of Oregon found that legalization of mobile sports betting heightens an increase in domestic violence when an NFL home team experiences an upset loss. And research from UCLA and USC has measured that online sports gambling increases the likelihood of household bankruptcy by as much as 25 to 30% after 3 to 4 years of legalization. Legalizing mobile sports betting does not just allow someone to bet on the outcome of the Vikings game. Revenue comes from in-game betting, in which users bet continuously on plays in the app, similarly to how social media keeps users addicted. This checks out with what the president of the Sports Betting Alliance shared in Senate Commerce last year, that they expect in-game wagers to count for 75% of the wagers made in the legal U.S. market by 2030. Longitudinal research from Southern Methodist University found that less than 5% of sports gamblers are observed to be net winners. The house wins. A series of surveys by the University of Massachusetts School of Public Health was presented to the Massachusetts Gaming Commission in August last year. They found that the data suggests there had not been, or had not been as of 2023, a substantial recapture of illegal sports betting revenues in Massachusetts between 2022 and 2023. The data was still being worked out, but the researcher noted it can take a long time to recapture revenue. It is not good public policy for the state of Minnesota to collect tax revenue on addiction in tandem with a predatory industry, which will in turn cost the state in human services. Minnesota families are dealing with enough financial issues due to inflation already. I ask you to vote no on Senate File 757. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony, Mrs. Delahunt. The next two testifiers, I think I'm going to call them up by two from this point on. Mr. Randy Sampson, CEO of Canterbury Park. And following next to him is J.T. Foley, the Executive Director for the Coalition for Fantasy Sports, if he could come up as well. And Mr. Sampson, if you could identify yourself for the record and proceed, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Randy Sampson. I'm the Chairman and CEO of Canterbury Park, and I'm here today representing our approximately 1,000 employees as well as the hundreds and thousands of fans that have enjoyed the thrill of thoroughbred and quarter horse racing at Canterbury every year since 1985. In addition to the state lottery, Minnesota has authorized three types of legalized gambling: tribal casinos, racetracks, and local charities. In my opinion, all three have been models for responsible management of gaming, and we all have repaid the state's trust by investing in the economic development of Minnesota and the communities we serve. For Canterbury Park, racing purses are truly the lifeblood of a successful horse industry. As competition for the gaming dollar has intensified, many states have stepped up to provide additional gaming options at horse tracks to create a thriving horse industry. Others have provided direct financial support to maintain competitive purse levels, as well as other steps to support horse racing. These states have horse industries that are succeeding in ways that Minnesota should emulate. On the other hand, states that are expanding gaming and not providing support for their horse industries are seeing iconic racetracks close and the jobs and economic impact of horse racing disappear. As the legislature has been considering legalizing sports betting, Canterbury Park has made it clear that we will support legislation that respects the value of all three types of gaming. A win-win-win result has always been possible with a bill that works for the tribes, charities, and racetracks. Senate File 757 meets that goal in the following ways: by taking a portion of the net revenue from sports betting and using it to fund a racing development fund, you will substantially increase purses, provide incentives for Minnesota breeding, and support our ongoing stable area programs and improvements that have created a strong and healthy racing community for horses, jockeys, trainers, and the many unsung heroes that care for the roughly 1,100 horses that make Canterbury Park home each summer. Also, by expanding advanced deposit wagering to include wagering on racing conducted in Minnesota, you will help Minnesota racetracks expand our reach to fans throughout Minnesota while continuing strong protections to prevent wagering by underage individuals. Canterbury Park supports Senate File 757. It is the product of honest and respectful discussions that have included legislators on both sides of the aisle, leaders of Minnesota's tribal nations, the racetracks, and charitable gaming organizations. It's taken a long time to build the trust necessary to get to this compromise position that has the support of Minnesota's gaming industry. We hope that future discussions on this bill and other gaming issues will benefit from the hard work that everyone has contributed to this process, and we look forward to continuing to work with the legislature to pass legislation that will provide the support our industry needs, not just to survive, but to thrive. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Sampson. I appreciate the testimony. And if we could get Dr. Christy Janigo to come up, and Mr. Foley, you're next on the list. So if you'd like to start your testimony, please identify yourself for the record and proceed after that.
All right. Lee Lang, Chair Yong, and members of the Senate State Local Government Committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today in support of Senate File 757. My name is J.T. Foley. I'm the Executive Director of the Coalition for Fantasy Sports. This coalition is made up of five member companies from leading innovative fantasy sports platforms: Prize Picks, Underdog, Better, Dabble, and Splash Sports. In attendance with me today are coalition members John Pauly from Underdog and Andrew Winchell from Better. The Coalition for Fantasy Sports is a leading voice advocating for fantasy sports industry. Together, we advocate for effective legislative policy that protects consumers, promotes innovation, and provides fair regulatory landscape for industry competition in the fantasy sports space. Our mission is to champion the interests of millions of fantasy sports consumers in America by promoting innovative and ensuring consumer protection through responsible play. Fantasy sports are played across the United States by a diverse group of individuals. The great state of Minnesota has the most avid sports and fantasy consumers. In fact, Minnesota has more fantasy sports players per capita than any other state in the country. We want to make certain that the fantasy sports consumers can continue playing contests they currently play in Minnesota, regardless of whether the state decides to authorize Las Vegas sports gambling. We want to thank Senator Klein and other co-authors for the work on this bill. SF 757 sets a good framework, and we will continue to work with Chair Klein to implement best practices that we see in the industry and around other parts of the United States to allow for innovation as the bill moves through this process. I want to thank you for the opportunity again, and let us know if you have any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Foley, for your testimony. Appreciate it. If we could get Mr. Justin Revac to make his way to the testifying table. I appreciate that. And Dr. Janigo, I hope I said that right.
That's right.
If you could introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Greetings, Chair Zhang and Lead Lang. My name is Dr. Christy Janigo, and I'm the American Legion Department of Minnesota Legislative Chair. And I'm an Assistant County Veterans Service Officer for my day job, where I help some of the state's most vulnerable veterans find housing, navigate their involvement with the justice system, seek mental health services, and access life-changing veteran benefits. First, I want to thank Chief Author, Senator Klein, as well as Senator Miller, Representative Stevenson, and the other lawmakers involved in the bipartisan and bicameral efforts over the past couple years. Last year, the Legion strongly supported HF 2000 and its Senate companion. Because of the charitable gambling tax cuts and the change to lawful purpose expenditures under Code 22 to allow our post to complete crucial capital improvements. We were devastated that the bill fell short in the final hours of the 2024 session, yet we're grateful the negotiations continued, which is what brought us SF 757 in its current form. Regarding issues that pertain to veteran service organizations, this bill would be better if it didn't force any arbitrary sunsets on us or constrain how much of our revenues we can use on our building repairs, when many of our buildings are unsafe or at the very least out of compliance with the ADA. Rest assured, our posts will strive for the maximum possible star rating with the Gambling Control Board, even for those posts that must use some revenues to fix up buildings. Our donations are how we carry out our charitable mission across our four pillars: Veterans Affairs and Rehabilitation, National Security, Children and Youth, and Americanism. Our more than 50,000 American Legion Department of Minnesota members agreed to prioritize advancing these tax cuts above all other things we want for the service member, military family, and veterans community. Again this year, because we think this will have the biggest impact. There are 537 American Legion posts throughout Minnesota, and 193 of them have charitable gambling operations. Those operations account for roughly 10% of all charitable gambling in Minnesota. While some say, oh, it's just gambling, we respectfully disagree. Charitable gambling is inextricably linked with crucial emergency supports for veterans. I ask for all lawmakers' support on this, both parties, for the veterans. As a CVSO, I work with veterans who have had everything go wrong in their lives. They sustained physical and mental disabilities during service that led to self-medicating with alcohol or drugs, which led them to not being able to work or family issues and justice involvement, which led to housing instability and food insecurity. My partners and I fight to keep some of these veterans alive under roofs and out of jail. We experience a tremendous amount of secondary trauma from the stories we hear of these veterans. I tell my new employees from the that this work will cost them, and they should have a therapist and a robust support system. This is unavoidable. We have to hear and then retell our veterans' stories in the pursuit of federal, state, and nonprofit benefits. As many benefits as there are specifically for the veterans' community, they are often not enough, or else it takes so long for the benefits to come in that there could be months of a veteran living on the streets. That is when I turn to charitable gambling operations for our Legion and VFW posts to ask them to pitch in to save a home, get the power turned back on, prevent an eviction, to feed small children, to make that critical car repair for the veteran living out of their vehicle in the dead of winter in sub-zero temps in Minnesota. These funds are a big part of how we reached an effective end to veteran homelessness last fall in Hennepin County, with Ramsey and the state of Minnesota as a whole soon able to make such a declaration. We've already seen a nearly 20% drop in revenues over last year since the enactment of the ETABS changes were rolled out at the beginning of this year. I can assure you that the cap to the gaming fees and the very small tax cuts that passed in 2023 were far from sufficient. Lawmakers should not pat themselves on the back for helping us while veterans continue to struggle. With heavy state and local taxes on top of other bills we must pay, these expenses handcuff our posts from helping the veterans in the community who are suffering. I've recently lost veterans I've tried to save, and their losses will always haunt me. Is this really how we will treat those who risked and sacrificed everything, including their lives? Is it not the government's responsibility to get out of the way when a charitable organization can meet needs in the community that they cannot fulfill? I'm sorry if I sound angry, but I'm the one who has to look these veterans in the eyes. This is reality for some of our veterans. Please help us, help me, to get our veterans in need the assistance they deserve by passing this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Janigo. And if we could get Rachel Jenner, Director of the Allied Charities of Minnesota, to step towards the testifier table. And Mr. Rivak, if I said that correctly, go ahead and introduce yourself as well and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Justin Rivak, And I'm the president of the Minnesota Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association, otherwise known as the HBPA. I'm also a racehorse owner. I represent the horsemen and women who call Canterbury Park their home in the summer, as well as the year-round residents like myself who are stakeholders in thoroughbred industry in Minnesota. I'm happy to be here to speak in favor of Senate File 757. Thoroughbred horse racing is at a crossroads in Minnesota and many states around the country. As the number of different types of gambling, such as sports betting, are legalized and the competition for gambling dollars increases. In states where racetracks are allowed to enhance purses via other forms of gambling, horse racing is thriving. But in states where they are excluded, tracks are closing at an alarming rate. Horse racing is a unique industry because owners have the ability to move their horses to states where the purse money is better. Canterbury Park is a remarkable racetrack. Canterbury Management and the Minnesota HBPA work together to provide the most welcoming and family-friendly stable area in the country, with incredible programs such as Furlong Learning, Abijah's on the Backside, and our Canterbury Chaplaincy. This has resulted in a strong loyalty from our horsemen and has kept them coming back. But as the purse imbalance between Minnesota and other states continues to increase, it becomes more difficult to convince owners to keep sending their horses back to Minnesota. The Minnesota HBPA believes that the revenue generated from this bill will go a long way towards fixing that imbalance and allow horse owners to continue to race their horses at Canterbury Park. We want to thank Senator Klein, Senator Pratt, Senator Miller, and all of the other elected officials and interested stakeholders that have worked together with us over the last few years to get the bill to this point. The Minnesota HBPA supports Senate File 757 and asks you to vote yes on its passage. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Evac. And we could get Father Peter Etzel, if I probably said that wrong as well, but if you could approach a table. And then Ms. Jenner, if you could start your testimony and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Lead Lang. Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rachel Jenner, and I am the Executive Director for Allied Charities of Minnesota. I'm here today to speak for the nearly 1,200 licensed organizations that conduct charitable gambling in Minnesota. These are veteran service organizations like the American Legions and VFWs. They are Lions Clubs and other fraternal civic organizations, youth sports, fire departments, and a variety of charities that are serving many, many purposes throughout our state. I am here today to express strong support for Senate File 757 and specifically the meaningful tax relief for charitable gambling organizations. We appreciate Senator Klein bringing this bill forward, building upon the work and input of all the stakeholders from last session. I want to thank Senator Klein and Senator Miller for working hard to build a framework for sports betting that has had bipartisan support and has brought everyone together in agreement on what's best for sports betting in Minnesota. This bill provides charitable gambling organizations with much needed significant tax relief for our industry, and we are very grateful for that. Last year, Minnesota charities paid $192 million in state tax, leaving us only $139 million for donations. We have been seeking tax relief for many, many years because since 2015, we have paid more annually in state taxes than we have donated. This is simply unacceptable. We are the ones who are filling so many needs in our communities. We are funding food shelves, assisting with veterans' issues, buying safety equipment for first responders, providing funding for school and a myriad of youth programs. When a football team needs new helmets, we are there. When a park needs to add equipment for children with disabilities and special needs, we are there. When a fire department needs a new fire truck or safety equipment, we are there providing that funding. And unfortunately, as you've heard, the recent changes in the 2023 legislation had a significant impact on our electronic pull tab games, which now generates the majority of our industry's revenue. The removal of the features such as open all and bonus play game animations have led to a nearly 20% decline in our revenue. In just 1 month, many organizations saw thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars, disappear. So the loss of that revenue has now made this tax relief urgent. We ask today that you support Minnesota's charities and pass Senate File 757 to provide us the necessary relief to continue the work strengthening our communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Jenner. If we could get Jack Meeks to head towards his fine table. And Father Etzel, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Chair Lang and members of the committee, my name is Father Peter Etzel. I'm a Jesuit priest currently serving in the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. I was a pastor on a reservation in South Dakota for 7 years, and I have seen many forms of gambling up close. I am here today to encourage you to vote no on Senate File 757, which could legalize online sports betting. I witnessed firsthand the negative impact gambling can have while serving as a pastor of a prominent parish in Milwaukee. Our parish bookkeeper, unbeknownst to us, was suffering from a gambling addiction, and she found holes in the parish's financial controls. She embezzled close to $1 million that she spent at a nearby casino. The person, a longtime parish employee, did this over the course of 18 months, much of it during a time of transition in parish leadership. She deftly covered the theft by altering the financial records and coming up with a scheme to carry cash out the door from the weekend collections. Shortly after the theft was discovered, when confronted, she pleaded not to be terminated from her employment. "I can pay it back," she said. We asked, "How much did you take?" She replied, "Oh, $10,000 to $15,000. She was sincere in thinking she only took up to $15,000. Unfortunately, that was far from reality. She had embezzled, as we learned over the years, nearly $1 million from our parish funds without even realizing it. It is frightening to see how much time, money, and resources people put toward their addiction. Now, as a parish, we had to recover our losses, as much of that money came directly from donations from our parishioners. We hired an attorney to assist us and spent 5 years recovering from this embezzlement. In the end, we spent over $100,000 just on legal fees to uncover exactly what she had done. Learning about our bookkeeper's gambling addiction was very troubling and created a large amount of financial and pastoral work for our parish as we engage in rebuilding trust with our parishioners and staff and getting back to on our feet financially. Fortunately, in Wisconsin at that time, for sure, gambling was limited to on-site only. One can only imagine how much worse this would have been had she had access to a gambling account on her phone and could place bets right from the office. Addicted gamblers often become desperate to feed their addiction. She was the mother of 3 children. Decisions like this impact spouses, children, grandchildren, and in my case, parishioners, employees in the local church. In closing, recently Pope Francis said efforts must be made to expose the mental illness, despair, and suicides caused by the fact that in every house there is a casino through the cell phone. I urge you to oppose the legislation on sports betting and save the people of Minnesota from falling more into the addictions that are already there. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Father Etzel, for your testimony. And if we could get Maria Cermak to come towards the table. I don't know if I said that correctly. You have to correct me when you get up here. And Mr. Jack Meeks, if you could identify yourself for the record and continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, Lead Lang, and members of the Senate State and Local Government Committee. My name is Jack Meeks, and I'm chairman of Citizens Against Gambling Expansion, an organization founded over 25 years ago to oppose the proliferation of gambling in our state. Thank you for allowing me to speak today in opposition to Senate File 757, which would be the largest expansion of gambling in Minnesota history. It would literally put a sports book gambling device in the pockets of every cell phone user in Minnesota. The addition of sports gambling will usher in a new era of gambling in our state, resulting in massive expansion and unleashing negative consequences for our youth and those gambling. I think this isn't just fearful thinking. We have seen the negative consequences of sports betting since the sports gambling floodgates opened. According to the most recent figures, in 38 states plus DC where sports betting is legal, US has now seen more than $437 billion in bets, at local sports books since the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act was repealed in 2018. Sports gambling is not to be excused as an innoxious game of entertainment. Rather, it will fundamentally change the way we interact with sports and how it is presented. It is a bad bet for Minnesota and will cause untold harm to our citizens as it has in other states and countries where it has been legalized. When we talk about gambling in 2025, we aren't merely talking about picking the Vikings to beat the Packers. We are speaking of placing bets on almost any kind of contest you can imagine, including in-game prop bets, betting on video games or esports, betting on who will get the rose on The Bachelor or who will win Best Actress at the Oscars. The truly dark side of sports gambling recently became public in the midst of the tragic wildfires of California that robbed thousands of families of their homes. One predatory online gambling website was taking wagers on when the last fire would be extinguished, as well as offering other ghoulish bets for gamblers to cash in on others' misfortune. These types of bets, if legalized by the Minnesota legislature, will happen in Minnesota dorm rooms and family rooms all across the state. Placed from a smartphone linked to a bank account and credit cards. Australia legalized sports betting in 2001 and provides a cautionary tale of that country's experience with these companies and their contests. It is especially comparable since 18 years is the legal age to wager in Australia as it is here in Minnesota. Studies have shown the reality of the consequences of legalized sports gambling in Australia. The huge increase of money spent and lost with gambling, the rise of problem gambling, the social costs of this gambling, including increased rates of bankruptcy, theft and embezzlement, divorce, and spousal and child abuse, and finally, increasing the number of youth gamblers. The legalization of sports gambling has been a failed experiment that would not be wise to import into Minnesota. To think that we can legalize sports gambling but not suffer the consequences lived by citizens around the world where sports gambling is legal is a foolish bet with no upside except for the predatory companies that host the websites and use proceeds to groom younger gamblers to try their luck. On behalf of CAGE, we implore you to not bet on our futures. Please oppose any legalization of sports gambling. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meeks. I appreciate the testimony. Members, I believe Ms. Cermak is, unless she is online, I'll give her another shot to unmute and give some testimony. Otherwise, I believe there is a letter in your packet that delineates her feelings on the bill. So, all right, I think that's enough. So, members, at this point, if you have any questions for Senator Klein or any of the testifiers, I think most of them stay in the room. Senator McQuaid.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Klein, I've not been a quiet opponent to the expansion of mobile sports betting. And just to be really transparent with the committee, I think this bill has a lot of work to do before it leaves the committee. And I will, at some point, I think, make a motion to table. But, you talked in the beginning about wanting to move people from the illicit market to a regulated market. We heard about, tribal exclusivity, which I'm very, very supportive of. we heard a little bit about, you know, money for a bunch of other things, but I just, you know, reading through this bill, I am so, so concerned, and I'll tell you why. I do not trust a predatory industry, especially the tech industry. Every single addictive thing on our phone, from the notifications to the endless scroll function, all that was modeled after the most addictive parts of gambling. And right now in Minnesota and Wisconsin and North Dakota and South Dakota, in order to gamble, you have to go somewhere. And you have to drive there or walk there or carpool there. You have to have the time to do that. You have to have the gas money to do it. There are barriers to gambling. But when it is in your pocket, connected to your bank account, because, you know, we, most of us have banking apps on our phones, you can gamble under this bill from the bed, from the carpool lane, from the boardroom, from the shower, if you have one of those magical showers that stays out of your way. And that is what the predatory mobile sports betting industry is hoping. They're betting on that, right? There's not everybody is addicted to gambling that could be addicted to gambling. In Connecticut, they expanded to mobile sports betting, and 71% of gambling revenue comes from fewer than 7% of the population. And it's the problem gamblers at 1.8%, and then the at-risk gamblers at 4.9%. Half of that, half of all the revenue, comes from 1.8% of the population. And I see in here, even in the amendment that we adopted, you know, it's people who opted to receive incentives and promotions can. People can opt out of, you know, receiving push notifications. People can set limits, or there's default limits that they can change. None of these protections, I mean, we have them already on all the other kinds of addictive technology functions, like limits on apps on our phones, and, you know, we can shut off our phone, but they're so easy to get around, and it's not going to solve for the addiction issue. And what's worse is that 75% of the money in this bill goes back to more gambling. I think like 3% comes to treatment of the problem we're about to create. It was 10% goes to DHS, and of that, one-third goes to the treatment. And so I don't even see how we're solving this like major problem that we're about to create. And we don't have to, right? All the states around us, with the exception of Iowa, have on-premise sports betting. And I've told you before, I'm fully supportive of on-premise. And banning in-game betting if we're going to do mobile. But we can keep going forward. We can expand more and more and more if we need to. But I don't know why we would do literally everything right now when we have seen from all the other states that have legalized massive harms. In Massachusetts, after they legalized sports betting, they went from 4% using the illicit market to 18%. People are using the illicit market more. And sure, you can ban yourself from one app, but we're giving out 11 licenses in this bill. And I am assuming that there's no limit to how many sports betting apps you can have on your phone. So you get banned from one, then you go to the other one. And if you can do $3,000 a month in one, and then $3,000, I mean, that's $33,000 in a month that you could do between all the apps. I think this is wildly irresponsible, and it benefits literally nobody except a predatory tech industry who have then paid off some very, very important partners that we have in the state who need money. And I loathe that. And so there is so much more work to be done to get any sort of real protections. I'm gonna be honest with you and say that if the industry likes this bill, it's probably not good, because it's the lack of protections that net them money and addict people to gambling, which is their hope. We have a lot of work to do before I think this could earn anywhere near positive remarks. And I wanna say to our folks who came in, our service members and charitable gambling, I want you to know that I hear you. And that this is about the tech industry in particular and their predatory practices. It has nothing to do with the wonderful work that you all do. And I'm very, very grateful for the work that you do. And I hear the need there. And I don't want to lose that. But this is not the way. Addicting 1.8% of the Minnesotans to gambling in order to net massive profits for a tech company and then sprinkling some to people who really need it is not a good policy for the state. So I can ask you specific questions if you're interested, Senator Klein. I think I pretty much laid out the amount of work that would need to go into this to be anywhere near what I would say a Minnesota standard would be.
Senator Klein.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, members, and thank you, Senator McQuaid, for your candor, and I think your authenticity and transparency that you have had all along opposing this bill. Let me answer a few points that have been made. You said right now to wager in the state of Minnesota, you need to travel to a bricks and mortar institution. That's just simply not the case. People in very large numbers are gambling on their phones currently. It's probably happened among the members of this committee and the members of our audience frequently and with increasing numbers day over day. And those are on, again, unregulated offshore platforms that provide no revenues to our state and have no limitations on underage use or problem wagering. That's the first point. And I guess the second point I would make is Minnesotans are doing this. They want to do it. They don't understand why we would protect them from themselves. A principle that I have in practicing medicine is that people have a right to make decisions, good, bad, or indifferent. They have that freedom. And if people want to wager on their phones, on a sporting event, I don't think it is our role to stand in their way.
Members, any additional questions, comments? Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I take it there's not a fiscal note here before us. Is that true, Senator Klein?
Mr. Chair, Senator Drazkowski, I apologize. It is not ready yet. We have the one from last year, but of course this bill is considerably different. So.
Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Klein. Senator Klein, I think you're right. The bill's not ready yet, and that's I concur with that and what Senator May Quaid had to say in that regard as well. I think there's a lot of questions about the bill. There's some things that, from those of us that have heard about the bill, we're just discovering. This is the Committee of Jurisdiction, and we are the fiscal committee that is charged with considering the fiscal implications of this for the state budget. I think it would be only responsible for us to hang on to this bill until we have the fiscal note. Senator Klein, any idea how long till the fiscal note comes?
Senator Klein?
Mr. Chair, Senator Drazkowski, I do not know that answer. I haven't gotten an estimate. One thing I would say is it would certainly be within the prerogative of this committee to call it back at the end of its course throughout the committee process to keep things moving, and then we can go over the fiscal note at that time.
Yep. Senator John? I think he's jumping in before he said yes, but I gotcha.
No. Sorry, Senator Gomez. Senator Klein, what is your intent to move this bill to?
Mr. Chair and members, it would be my hope that the committee would vote to move this to judiciary. Thereafter, it has to go to Health and Human Services, Commerce, taxes, finance, and I'm missing one. But it has
judiciary.
To stops to make. Judiciary, yeah.
thank you, Senator Klein, and thank you, Chair Lang. I think for our committee, we can always bring it back. And if you would be open to do that, I would be in favor of that. I certainly hear some of the concerns that folks have, but I think that is for a different jurisdiction to discuss. I think for this one, we've seen some of the appropriations that it's going to be making to committees under our jurisdiction. And I would be a yes vote in moving it forward and would be open to having it back here in this committee once, because I think it's quite a journey for your bill. Thank you.
Senator Gustafson.
Thank you, Chair Lang. Thank you, Senator Klein, for bringing this forward. One of the things that sort of struck me that I wanted to ask you questions about was Section 18 on the integrity monitoring. So I have a couple of questions, and maybe some of this will get sorted out in judiciary, but I feel, I'm sorry, what?
Can you give me a line?
Well, it's pretty much all of Section 18. So it starts at line 27.3.
I'll give you the time, Senator Klein.
Okay. So one of the things that I'm keeping an eye on, and again, some of this might be addressed in judiciary, but I do think that it is important to bring up here in why I would support this coming back to state local government. When you go to Section A, line 27.5, it talks about an independent integrity monitoring provider. And I bring this up because one of the things I'm worried about and in just moving through, and especially companies like this, I know the word predatory might be sort of inflammatory in the context of using this, but I am worried about the companies that are going to be running this. And I look at the millions of dollars of fraud that are a potential place for them to target is a new online gambling. So one of the questions I had was, one, the independent integrity monitoring provider. If you could speak a little bit more about what that looks like, where that comes from, and then I have a couple of follow-up questions about this as well.
Senator Klein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Gustafson. And the sort of the actual structure of an independent integrity monitoring provider, it's possible that Mr. Plato or another of my testifiers knows more about what that looks like in other states. I really think this is an effort to give the commissioner some power to monitor and then intervene with sort of exploitative behavior or targeting. That's sort of the way I would interpret that, Senator.
Senator Gustafson.
Thank you, Chair Lang. I would be interested in hearing more from them. That would be helpful. I just know millions of dollars are lost annually to gambling fraud in U.S. sports betting industry. So I'm happy to hear that there is some of that in place, but I am sort of concerned if we don't have that, if that part of it isn't a little bit more strict or spelled out or defined in this section. I notice on line 27.12, it says report the suspicious activity to the commissioner. All mobile sports betting operator or mobile sports betting platform provider licenses that contract with the integrity provider, whoever that is, and the sports governing body that governs the sporting event on which the suspicious activity deemed to have taken place. Concerned about what suspicious activity is going to be looked at, because as I look through here, there's everything from match fixing to insider betting to identity theft, account takeovers. There's a lot of things that could go wrong. My question would be, then what? After it's reported, what happens? And then I know my guess is that you'll probably move it to lines 27, 23 through 30, where it sort of talks about consequences, but it doesn't mention anything about criminal or civil charges. And I know I just threw a lot at you, but if you have a response to any of that, I'm happy to repeat myself too.
Senator Klein.
Chair and Senator Gustafson. Yeah, I think the penalties would be, there's a section much later in the bill on criminal penalties, for sort of underage use or so forth. And I would anticipate, if I looked long enough, I would find where the penalties are for game fixing and so forth. This is also an opportunity to answer an earlier point that was made by another committee member, which is that if you have 11 platforms, you could just get banned from one on your phone and then bump over to the next one. The bill specifically provides that, for example, if somebody exceeds their daily limit and is cut off from one app, there's a mechanism through the commissioner to make sure that they are not able to access all apps in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Senator Klein.
And sorry to interrupt, Mr. Chair and Senator Gustafson, I respect the fact that you're looking at this integrity monitoring, and if you're willing, I can work on it more with you before we go to judiciary.
Senator Gustafson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Senator Klein. I would like to have another look at it. Again, this will, once it goes to judiciary, I trust that Senator Latz will have a look at this as well. So I trust that committee can handle maybe some of the consequences or how it gets monitored. But this does look like something that is just has a potential for an enormous amount of lost dollars to fraud. And I would really just like us to be mindful of that as this bill is, this is the first committee stop, correct? So as it moves through, and especially maybe when it goes to judiciary, but it would be great to have it come back and just to take a look at what has changed.
Thank you. Senator Curran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Klein, I could ask you a couple of questions, but I don't think it's necessary. And for our charitable gaming organizations, I've been a massive champion of them since I arrived here. I think those organizations do great things, and the only abuse they receive is from the state of Minnesota and the current tax burden and the assault by our governor and the assault on the e-poll tabs, which, as they confirmed, reduced their revenues by 20%. So under this hypothetical model is we've paid off everybody, right? Everybody in there in the process. I'm not a fan of exclusivity at all, but look at the number one target is the charitable gaming. It gets some hypothetical $40 million a year maybe. You confirmed that you had a hit of 20% of those revenues. Last year, you paid $192 million in state income taxes. You had $139 million to give to the most local charitable opportunities serving all of the greatest things that you spoke about in your testimony. But under this model, as I read it, that's $11 million net gain, maybe, on an annual basis. So I look at it and say, who's going to benefit? And so a little promise of some revenue on the backside, and I look at it, it's a simple math. It's $11 million. Because they fought, and that same group is going to fight to take away, if you continue, if you could recover that 20% and then grow that until you hit the next threshold when the assault will come back to take away all of the e-gaming, e-poll tabs under some other made-up fallacy and take all your revenue away for some promise of greatly reducing your revenue of some small share of this sports book. I don't think that assault's going to stop. And so for me, we had an opportunity to make significant change. The governor chose not to do that. He inflicted the harm. Almost $200 million. We could have cut, and just so people know, that it was on the backs of paying off the stadium, the Minnesota Vikings stadium. Paid it off early, great. But at the end of the day, they moved that revenue into the general fund. So $200 million going to the general fund. We should have reduced that tax burden by 50% back then. You'd have another $100 million, you'd have another $100 million right directly in our communities today. We could put that $100 million back, but not through this process, because there's nothing guaranteeing you to buy into this, along with everybody else who's getting a spiff, that you have a future. I think this would guarantee the demise of it, because you'll get the little spiff on the front side and on the back door. They'll continue to work to take those away. So, Senator Klein, I can't support this bill. I won't support the bill for the purposes I just stated. And so, whether we lay it over or table it or take a vote, I do request a roll call on the final bill, if that's where we get. But for that reason, I can't support it.
Roll call requested and granted. Senator Fateh.
I did.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Klein. I did have a bunch of comments and questions, but I'll limit it to just one. I think I'll just probably be repeating everyone else, but there's been a lot of stories from folks that have been struggling with addictive gambling. That they've been assigned private hosts and concierges that are specifically designed to continue gambling, especially large amounts of money, taking them further and further into debt. One of the stories is from Dr. Kavita Fisher, who I think was on the testifier list today but wasn't able to testify, who also had their story in the Wall Street Journal that's inside members' packets. Talking about when she was at her lowest, that her host was repeatedly giving her credits over and over again. At one point giving $36,000 within the first 4 months of 2023. And at one point, the host received an email from her with her asking if they give out loans because she couldn't afford her mortgage. The host responded by offering some resources to deal with her addiction, but at the same time, she was still getting bombarded with messages about more incentives to continue on gambling. So that's the problem I'm having with this. And what Senator May Quaid was talking about earlier is that such a large chunk of the revenue is dependent on so few people continuously gambling away their livelihoods. And no matter how many guardrails we can put in place, no matter how many committees could vet through this, the reality is that this industry is a function of banking on their successes off of people's people's addiction and people's struggles with gambling. And that's how they're banking on making their profits. And that's why I can't support this legislation. I appreciate the hard work you put in, Senator Klein and others, but that's why I'll be a no on this as well.
Thank you, Senator Partey. Senator McQuaid. Senator Klein, did you have a response?
Just to respond briefly, and thank you, Senator Fateh. I concur with you that one of the most alarming things that we heard in Senator Marty's hearing was this targeting with sort of VIP status of particularly vulnerable individuals who are clearly in a state of financial distress and then would receive a text with a $500 incentive or something. I attempted to answer that within the A13 that you all adopted, where there's a prohibition on individualized incentives or promotions. I'll be the first to say that this language is not nearly as strong as I would like it to be. This is sort of placeholder language, but I think that practice of sort of targeting people who are in financial distress needs to be addressed before this bill becomes law, and we should have firm language in place to prohibit that practice.
Thank you, Senator Makewade.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Senator Klein, I guess, you know, if people want to move forward, I'm going to ask you some specific questions. So there's some language in this bill about, like, the commissioner will study, you know, ways to not have gambling be addictive. One of the things we know right now today is that one of the most addictive functions of mobile sports betting is in-game betting. So it's not, will the Vikings win? You know, who knows? But it's, will they make this kick? Will they make this sack? How many yards? You know, and it's the dopamine hit, dopamine hit, dopamine hit, dopamine hit. That's what makes it addictive. And if you talk to people today who struggle with problem gambling, they will say, like, look, I joined to bet on my favorite team, right? Like, I just joined, bet $50 on the team to see if who'd win. And now I'm getting up at 3 a.m. to watch sports I don't even know about in Australia to bet on random sports that I've not heard of either. And so why would we keep in-game betting in this bill, knowing that it is the most addictive part of mobile sports betting, and it's one of the most predatory parts of it?
Mr. Chair and Senator McQuaid, I'm not sure I agree with the characterization that it is the most predatory part. It's also the part that most consumers of sports wagering wish to participate in. It's a huge part of the market because people find it enjoyable. You know, I think we prohibit it, and we would lose the support of sort of significant entities within this bill. I would think the tribes, certainly, because it would decrease revenue substantially.
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think, Senator Klein, your answer is like the whole thing, right? Like, they lose revenue because it's so addictive that if you can't do it, people don't stay on and bet over and over and over again. Similar question, if the legal age to sports bet is 21, why are we allowing people to bet on college sports when almost half the population or more isn't even 21 yet?
Senator Klein.
Mr. Chair and Senator McQuaid, college sports propositional bets, of course, are banned within the game to protect college athletes, but college sports are an activity that is a significant part of the wagering market.
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Klein, I've told you this before too, but college kids are kids, right? They live in dorms and in frats and in sororities. They don't have security and lots of money and, you know, an entourage to travel with them. They're kids. They go to school. They go to class. And we've had so many stories of people threatening coaches and threatening players. And if we want to talk about the integrity of the game, and now you have, like, a, you know, college swimmer, and they're like, if you lose this race, then we'll throw some money your way. And it's like, how do you, I mean, it's just, I don't understand why we would put this kind of pressure on college kids, having someone gamble away their 401k if they don't make a three-pointer. I think those, removing in-game betting and removing the betting on college sports would go a long way to putting in the kinds of protections that we're talking about here. I mean, I want to get back to the limits. You know, we have some default limits in here, but am I correct in understanding that someone could change those at any point in time?
Senator Klein.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. There are default limits that you can opt out of or you can adjust.
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe another suggestion for the bill is to go through this whole bill, and any time it says self-imposed or opt-in or opt-out, to not do that, because, again, this is the addictive nature. Most people, when they start betting again, it's for fun, right? This is the whole point, is that there are a lot of people right now who don't even know that they're at risk of having problem gambling issues. And they go into this for fun, right? Get a free $200 if you sign up. Okay, why not? Like, I watch sports. I won the Senate bracket for March Madness last year, and I plan to win again this year, but I didn't have a predatory sports book involved in it. But people who go into it for fun and then they end up falling down this rabbit hole, that's when you change your behavior. That's when you set different daily limits. That's when you do opt into the VIPs and concierges. I mean, I think any sort of opt-in is or maze is allowing for this predatory behavior to continue. Tell me about the cooling off period and how that works with all the apps.
Senator Klein.
Mr. Chair, first let me answer the question, or actually explain to the committee what Senator McQuaid is proposing. She's saying mandatory limits that cannot be adjusted or waived. So that would be the state of Minnesota telling everyone, you cannot bet on your device more than $200 a day. That's the law. You can't bet. It violates sort of a principle of self-determination, I guess, that I believe in, and I wouldn't support that. The three-hour cooling-off period is no longer a part of the bill. It was eliminated in the A13 and substituted for the language on targeted incentives.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the parts about cooling off, the 30-day cooling-off period doesn't exist anymore?
Senator Klein.
That's incorrect, sorry. The 30-day cooling-off period can you point me to the line that you're looking at?
I'm on personal limit, so 22.3, down the page. Mr. Chair.
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could ask it a different way, I guess what I'm trying to understand is how, like, if I download DraftKings and I don't know the other ones, give me another one, whatever, another one, Sports Betting United, and I, get to my limit on DraftKings on how much I can lose in a 24-hour period, and now I have a cooling-off period, can I go over to Sports Betting United and bet over there?
Mr. Chair, Senator McQuaid, so the answer to your question is at line 23.5 through 23.9. where if a self-imposed limit is violated, it's reported to the commissioner, and then the commissioner notifies all other platforms of that violation.
Mr. Chair.
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you. And so, Senator Klein, so you could just change a limit amount and not violate that and then not have all the other apps be notified?
Senator Klein.
I'm not sure I totally understand the question, but if you change your limit amount, there's a 72-hour cooling-off period that would apply across all platforms.
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right, so you could just change the amount for the month, for the year, and then just continue betting. Like, if I knew the Super Bowl was coming up, I could have changed my wagering limit from, $3,000 to $10,000, and then if I hit $3,000 as I had originally planned, 80 hours before the Super Bowl, I could hit $10,000 the day after.
Mr. Chair, Senator McQuaid, that's accurate, except that the changes that you made would not be effective for 72 hours.
Yeah, I'm
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you. Right, yes. Yeah, so if I changed it 80 hours before. Okay, I have many more questions. The prohibition on push notifications, am I reading this accurately that the only time that messages can't be sent promoting things on a user's device, I'm looking at 24.14 and 15, is when they're under self-imposed restrictions, as in they had to have restricted themselves?
Senator Klein.
Mr. Chair, I'm just reading the language here. Which part did you say that this was sort of an opt-in?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 24.14 and 24.15. The only time that they can't send messages or promoting things is while they're on self-imposed restrictions.
Senator
Mr. Chair, I think I understand the question now. Senator McQuaid, so the first part of this prohibition, I think, is the actual push-button notifications. And then the second part, I think, is to prohibit platforms from targeting people while they're in the process of sort of setting their daily limits, saying, wait a second, don't do that. That's a dumb thing to do. So that sort of addresses that specific circumstance where they're setting their limits.
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's only while they're setting self-imposed restrictions, not after or before?
Senator Klein.
Mr. Chair, Senator McQuaid, no, that's incorrect. The first part of the prohibition, 24.7 to 24.11, bans push notifications.
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it just says while the application or website is inactive, they're actively using it, are they allowed to receive a bunch of notifications, here's more money, do this, here's another game, bet on this thing?
Mr. Chair, Senator McQuaid, that's right. So the purpose of push notifications is that you're not sitting in committee and all of a sudden DraftKings texts you, hey, do you want to bet on tonight's baseball game? But if you're actually in DraftKings and trying to wager, yes, you can get notified about circumstances.
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, Senator Klein, the amount of times I've picked up my phone to look at the time and then opened Blue Sky is enormous. And so I can only imagine how many times people would pick up the phone, open that app, and now they're getting all these notifications about sports they've never heard of or bets they wouldn't even think about making. And I think this goes to the predatory, addictive nature of it. I have more questions. And, yep, okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to keep going. There's some 32.18, we're talking about data protection. So individual or identifying data, it looks like, is considered private. And then on 32.26, we're prohibiting these sports betting apps from selling individual identifying data. Does this also prohibit the sale of other data that's used to target us for ads? Are they collecting, for example, the days that you're most likely to make bets based on when you get paid or when you pay child support or when your mortgage comes out of your bank account? And is there anything in this bill that prohibits any sort of algorithmic compiling of that information to find the best times and days to send you those messages while you're in the app to get you to bet on more things?
Senator Klein.
Mr. Chair and Senator McQuaid, no, there is not a ban on algorithms. You know, those protections around private data are kind of the essential protections that Minnesotans demand when they log on to applications like this. And this language gives the commissioner broad authority to protect that data going forward.
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to be really clear, Senator Klein, because we've got name, account number, social security number, or uniquely identifying indicia. That is considered private. But the other stuff is not. And, you know, I think we all hope that, the data I just read off to you is private, although who knows anymore. But it doesn't prohibit the ability to collect all this data about us, our behaviors, our habits, our spending habits, our, you know, all of those things, and using an algorithm to then push you, which is what algorithms do in everything else, is to push you to do things more, right? It's to make you angrier, to make you more excited, or whatever, on social media apps. This does not prevent them from using all the data they collect on you to get you to bet more.
Mr. Chair, Senator McQuaid, no, that's, again, inaccurate. So it says if the data is linked to your name, account number, social security number, or other uniquely identifying information, then that is considered private data. And the definition of data would be much broader than that. It would be the things that you're speaking of. So if it's linked to who you are, linked to who Aaron McQuaid is, any data collected would be private data.
And Senator Klein, am I correct in assuming that this is what you would call a standard definition? And I don't know if maybe that's a question for council too, but I don't know if Ms. James has an opinion on the matter.
Madam Chair and members, I don't know that I can answer your question directly. This would be a great question for Priyanka Primo. But I just wanted to note that the data on individual earnings, that's on about the operators. And then it's also about the operator application and licensing information. So that second sentence there that makes it non-public data is about the operators and not about the wagers.
I don't don't know if that helped. Senator Makewhite.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if it helped. It was certainly clarifying. And I want to be really clear, too, Senator Klein. This is talking about the sale of private data, not the use of private data, right? So no, Sports Betting United, this random app that I just made up, can't sell my data. But it doesn't say that they can't use this data and literally any other data to compile, to make an algorithm to get me to bet more, right? To find the perfect days and times and parts of the month or parts of the year when I'm more likely to do it. That is really, really concerning to me right now. Like the way that you've presented this is that like Minnesotans want to do this. And we're not talking about like, oh, when I have the idea to go and bet, we're talking about introducing an algorithm that is meant to get you to take certain actions by using, you know, personal data. I'm sure, you know, lots of our data is for sale. That's a whole industry right now, and collecting all of that data to get us to bet more. And that is my biggest concern about this. Again, it's not whether, I have no problem with people betting on sports. I do it all the time. What I have a problem with is introducing a predatory industry that can use things like algorithms to manipulate our behavior to get us to do things we wouldn't otherwise do. And a lot of people would not be susceptible to that manipulation. Like I am not susceptible to gambling addiction. I don't find it interesting. But I know a lot of people who are. And who would be. And that right algorithm, the right compiling of information, get them at the right time, that's really dangerous. And that is why I have such an issue with the mobile sports betting part in particular. Did you wanna respond to that? Okay, good, because I have more questions.
Thank you, Senator Makewhite. Members, any additional questions? Senator Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I was looking at the fees, and we have in the bill a scale of fees. If you are going to be a mobile sports betting platform provider, your license is a $16,500 application fee, a $250,000 license fee, and then to renew every year, $83,000. Senator Klein, tell me that's not a barrier for entry for new businesses.
Senator Klein.
Mr. Chair, if the members could just point me to line items when they reference certain parts of the bill, but those are substantial numbers.
I'm on page one of the summary, Senator Klein.
Oh, okay. In any case, yeah, those are substantial licensing and operator fees that go to sort of the activities that we require as a state to regulate this industry.
So, Mr. Chair, if we could.
Senator Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Klein. So, I guess my point is we are creating, you know, something that if you're going to get into this as a business, you've got to be a huge business to be able to afford this to begin with. So, I can only see where this industry could go or will go, and it's going to be the big guys are going to continue in this industry, and any little guys or gals that want to get into it aren't going to get in. Because it's $250,000 to get in the first year, $83,000 every year after that to stay in. You know, and I understand you've got to create revenue for this bill in order to mortar together all the blocks that you do in a bill and all the pages and all the articles and sections. But that's not a good strategy or a good approach for an industry that allows competition and allows more participation. It almost seems like fencing, already written into the bill up front. We see fencing bills come forward in a variety of areas around licenses in this state, whether you're in real estate or some other regulated field. These bills come in. In this particular case, it's written right into the bill. As the industry is being developed or authorized initially. Another thing I look at, and I share Senator Gustafson's concerns about Article 1, Section 18 of the bill that she talked about earlier, and I look at page 70 of the bill, Article 5, Section 11, where we create a new crime in here. So if you are a person who is going to go to the Vikings and say, please don't block that defensive end when he comes through because I've got a bet on the game and, you know, here's $10,000, you're in jail. That's what you say in that particular item in the bill, Senator Klein. And so we're creating and anticipating in the bill, we're going to need to create plans for a new crime that's going to evolve because of this. And we're making provisions in the bill in order to accommodate that. And so we're acknowledging in the bill there's going to be more crime because of this. We're going to create government in order to deal with that crime. It's going to cost government money. We don't have a fiscal note. We don't know how much. I think, again, members, I think it's our responsibility. I think it would be irresponsible to send a bill forward out of here without a fiscal note. But it's contemplated in the bill. We're creating a bill. We know it's going to create a crime, and then we're going to tax people and spend money in order to create government in order to deal with that crime. I don't think that's a good way to do things. The other thing is, a lot of the discussion has been on problem gambling, and this is the same insanity, members, that we've seen in the marijuana bill. We bring a big bill forward that's a complicated bill, and we acknowledge in the bill that it's going to create a problem. It's going to create a societal problem, and we have multiple places in the bill that that acknowledge that. And so knowing it's going to create a societal problem, we tax the industry we're allowing and authorizing in the bill. We pile that money up in government, and we develop government and programs with the hope that the government and programs are going to solve the problem we created with the bill. Members, I call that insanity. And it happened in the marijuana bill, too. I've seen it happen in a few others in my tenure here in the legislature. I don't think we should be doing bills that create problems with the hope that government's going to come around and fix them, because, as we know, it doesn't, and it won't. And Senator McQuaid, I agree with you. Government's not going to be able to fix what this creates, but we have the bill before us. We see a study in the bill, the last section of the bill, study of motivations and beliefs of young adult gamblers and appropriation for it. Okay, we're gonna do the bill. We're gonna set the wheels in motion for this to happen. The grinder's gonna be running, members, and we're going to try to study what's gonna come out the other end of the grinder. Well, the grinder's already running, the switch is turned on. The electrician's gone home, and it's going to continue to run. The time to do the study is before we do the bill. And I think that's the direction we should be going. And, you know, the parts about charitable organizations and veterans are very compelling, but Senator Klein, members, we should just cut their taxes. All we have to do is cut the inflator. There's $1 billion in spending gone. We can cut taxes for charitable organizations and not do this stuff, which is not the way to do it. It's a wrong approach. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Senator Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be a voting yes, but with so much pain and anguish. This is the hardest bill. I think I'll be perhaps one of three hardest bills in my 9 years as a state senator that, and I've agonized over it, and we've had a lot of conversations soul to soul with you, Senator Klein. But I just want to thank whoever in your group of stakeholders that came up with line 37.5, because for me, that's perhaps the most important piece of this bill is that you set aside 10% for problem gambling, and the commissioner can decide, and I love on page whatever the towards the end of the bill, it lays out a third, and of that 10%. And for me, that was the tipping point. But it's just a classic, how a bill becomes law 101, and that conscience versus constituency, and how are we as elected representatives up here? Are we to vote do the people back home send us here to vote our conscience, or do they send us here to vote their what their constituency based on polling or numbers. And sometimes we vote our conscience, and sometimes we vote our constituency. And but thank you for bringing this bill forward, and I am a yes vote.
Senator Gustafson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief. I want to echo that, too. I thank Senator Drazkowski for bringing up the Legion. I'm a Legion member. I'm listening to the stories, and they are heartbreaking. And, yes, it would be just easier to cut your taxes. And I do, hearing those stories, I sit and I think about the stories that you're telling about mental health and, you know, suicide rates and addiction, and I just wonder if this is just adding another level to that. Now there's a new addiction and a new level of mental health despair and a new thing that we have to be concerned about. So are we solving a money problem and then just creating more of the problem that you need the money for? So I'm with it. I'm reluctant as well, but I also know it's happening already. You know, it's happening. And so if it's going to happen, and that sort of, you know, to Senator Drazkowski's point about why are we allowing this stuff where we know there's a societal problem and then we just put it forward. But it is already happening. And so if that's the case, if we can put guardrails on it and have it in a way where we can, you know, I don't know, regulate it so that it isn't just so widespread, be nice. But I will say I have so many concerns as well. And I do hope it comes back here. I really don't think it should go further. After it makes all the other stops, I think it has to come back here, too. I think we need to see it before it goes to the floor to finance. And I hope that that's the case, because I do, there are several questions I have, and I know we're on a time constraint, so I don't want to keep asking, but there are a lot of things that I'd like to keep looking at and keep an eye on as it moves through other committees.
Thank you, Chair. And I'll be brief before I make a motion to move this forward to Judiciary. Echoing what Senator Gustafson had mentioned, I thank you for working on this bill. I know you've been at it for quite some time. We're talking to lots of stakeholders. But it is something that's here. As this letter had stated from some of the organizations, 1 in 5 adult in Minnesota or in America is engaged in it. You know, when we used to watch SportsCenter or now ESPN on YouTube, we used to just hear the GOAT debate. But now we have the GOAT debate, and then we get the over and under, and then you get the little disclaimers on every YouTube channel. I have four younger brothers. There are five of us. Four of them are college-age young men. And them and all the classmates that are in their classes, they see this every day as they're trying to catch the highlight of the sports match the day before. So it's something that's here. I think if we're not part of the discussion, it's going to come back, and it's going to come back in a form that we won't be able to control anymore. And so I know that there is a lot of work that needs to be done. I thank all the organizations that have a deep concern about mobile gambling, some of the technology that's coming before us, but I think it's a discussion that is a larger issue with what's happening to our society right now with all the technology and all the different changes that's impacting our society as a whole. But I would like to see the discussion continue, and I will move to refer this bill to the Judiciary Committee.
Members, there's a motion before the committee. Mr. Senator Zhang has moved. This will be a roll call vote. So if we could have staff go through the roster.
Chair Lang?
Aye.
Chair Zhang?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gustafson?
Aye.
Vice Chair McQuaid?
No.
Senator Barr?
No.
Senator Carlson?
Aye.
Senator Swatzinski?
Yep.
Senator Drazkowski?
No.
Senator Eichhorn?
No.
Senator Fateh?
No.
Senator Johnson Stewart?
Yes.
Senator Coran?
No.
Mr. Chair, there are 6 ayes and 6 noes.
Members, having not a sufficient number of votes to pass the committee, the bill stalls out here. So thank you, Senator Klein, for the time. Next on the agenda, we have Senate File 978. Senator Marty, I haven't seen him. Oh, there he is. And I would I'm going to start. He was online. Mr. Plato, I'm sure if you're ready and available after Senator Marty gives his introduction, we'll go from there. So, Senator Marty, welcome to State and Local Gov.
Thank you.
Senate File 978, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciated the discussion on the last bill, and I'm glad to be able to have a chance to present Senate File 978. I'm not, as some of you know, not a proponent of online betting, but I've told proponents that if Minnesota is to make the move forward on this, if we're going to legalize, if we're going to expand this, I think we have to do everything in our power to prevent real safeguards, and not just ones that the industry finds they can live with, but I think we have to be very careful, because the states that have legalized it have found out they have huge increases in addiction, huge increases in bankruptcy, huge increases in other problems. And I think it's a very serious matter, and as several of you discussed earlier, it's highly addictive, and doing it on a mobile phone, which is available 24/7, makes it far more accessible. Wanted to quickly start a couple more comments before going through a few provisions in the bill. I'll start by saying that I've appreciated the work of the tribes on their work on this issue. I respect fully the tribal compacts, and my bill honors tribal exclusivity. The thing that some may not like is it wouldn't be as profitable, because frankly, we'd have more restrictions. And I want to say that in terms of sports betting, you've had some of this discussion. We had a hearing on this a while back. But the industry has said by legalizing it, we will have far better control. It'll help address problems with gambling addiction. It'll help address problems with youth gambling. The reality is it doesn't. It doesn't have it. There's been increases in across the board in ages, including young people, more people betting when it becomes legalized. There's already, as Senator Klein mentioned, a huge number of people who are doing the illegal offshore thing. But if you're a 16-year-old kid and you're betting on sports right now illegally, we come in as a state and say, oh, we're going to legalize this here. Kid says, oh, great, now I can bet here. Oh, I guess I can't. I'm not 21 yet. So the kid's going to just give up and say, oh, I can't bet anymore. No, they're going to keep doing what they're doing. The trouble is, by bringing this in, we have a huge onslaught of advertising. In the Super Bowl, there weren't that many because sports betting isn't legal in Minnesota, so it was just the national ads, and they're not going to waste a lot of money on those ads. But the onslaught of advertising, you watch sports in any state where it is there, it's nonstop. The billboards, everywhere else, there's advertising, 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 which entices people to see gambling as a regular thing. We don't have, I mean, my bill does not have a provision for youth sports integrity, because we've never needed a youth sports integrity, because we've never had a problem with it, which you bring in when you have more of the gambling. But one main point I want to make, too, and that is that sports betting is legal in Minnesota. Senator Mae Quaid was saying she does this all the time. I think a lot of people do, because it's legal. You can bet with your friends, your neighbors, your family. You can bet with total strangers. You can bet on any sporting event you want. The issue here is, are we going to bring in a predatory industry? And Senator Mae Quaid called it predatory, and I will agree it is. I know in the last bill you put on an amendment that says that the VIP treatment, the concierge thing is voluntary. But I mean, realistically, if you're struggling with gambling, you're going to turn down somebody giving you special treatment and somebody who's going to give you gifts and give you all this other stuff? No, you're going to accept it. So nobody's going to turn it down. And that's the nature of the industry has been very predatory. I'm worried gambling addiction is as powerful addiction as any other kind of substance addiction. It has a far higher suicide rate. The Granite Falls treatment program in Minnesota, the one residential gambling addiction treatment program, the director of that says that virtually half of their patients with gambling addiction have thought about suicide, and one in five has actually attempted suicide. You check any other addiction, there's nothing close to that kind of thing. It's a huge public health risk, and as I think we should recognize, it's one that affects not just the person, but it affects their family, their friends. As the one priest said, it affects their businesses, the places they work, because of fraud and so on. And finally, I want to say, before going into a few specifics of the bill, that is the proponents claim this drives out the illicit sports market. Other states have not found that out. The American Gaming Association has been reaching out to federal regulators saying, please do something about this illicit stuff. It's growing. And this was supposed to displace it, but it doesn't displace it. People continue reaching out to that because they're making that decision. And unfortunately, because there's so much advertising, every kid sees it and they see it. That's sports, it's advertising. You look at ESPN, things, everything has the point spread on all their scoreboard stuff, everything else nowadays. You cannot miss it. So quickly wanted to mention Senate File 978, as I said, I'm not trying to push and say we should do this. I'm saying if we want to move ahead with sports betting, we should not do it unless we're going to accept all the restrictions here. I'm going to just mention a few of them in the bill. One of them is related to liability of the industry. If I go into a bar and I've had a little too much to drink, the bar serves me more drinks, they have, under our dram shop laws, they're going to have huge liability. This is an industry that's different than that. In this case, let's assume I go into a bar somewhat intoxicated. They're going to start saying, well, you know, we can give you a special two-for-one offer or free drinks. You're such a good customer. They actually entice you to do it at the time you are least able to handle it. So my bill has, on page 32 and 33, it has some restrictions on that, which would say that the industry, like other industries, is liable if they do something that deceives somebody into doing something highly addictive behavior. The second thing I will say about the bill is advertising. I mentioned that earlier, a huge problem with advertising. And on page 18 of the bill, I have some restrictions, one of which is much, much, much weaker one is in the other bill. But we would say that any print, digital, or other publication, or radio, TV, or other broadcast, if more than 10% of the audience is under 21, people who are not legally allowed to, you cannot market to them. If you take an event like Super Bowl, if it's got 2 million viewers in Minnesota, 10% of the market is 200,000 kids. I think saying, okay, you can advertise if it's less than that kind of thing, then it's okay. But this is the other bill that you laid on the table, says under 30% of the market. That's not going to limit anything, because you always have less than 30% of kids. But 10% is a huge amount. If we do this, we're not going to have the broadcast advertising, the marketing. It would only be specifically to adults that you could be marketing. And the second part of it, also on page 18, is no advertising on public property. It was a study, one TV station or somebody did a study of Chicago Bulls, I think, Toronto, whoever it was, basketball game. In a three-hour period, they saw over 700 logos or other marketing ploys for sports betting. Logos on the sidelines, logos on the court side, logos on the wrap around the target field, everywhere like that. That happens in every state that has it. All our facilities in Minnesota are publicly owned facilities. If so, we have the ability to ban advertising there. Does taking away their advertising reduce their profits? Yes, it would significantly cut into their profits. But it's worth doing because it's such a highly addictive thing, and we are marketing it to the kids who are the ones seeing it. We already have like 30% of kids in high schools around the country are gambling. You're going to have a huge spike in it. And in terms of it, again, most of the states that have legalized sports betting, you can look at the numbers. They have huge, like in New Jersey, I mean, 2.5-fold increase in calls to their gambling hotline after sports betting was allowed. And New Jersey wasn't a state without a lot of gambling. They were one of the lead states in gambling. You put on online sports betting, all of a sudden you have a doubling or more of the calls to the hotline. And then finally wanted to mention that how we spend the money. If in the previous bill, most of the money was going to subsidize other gambling entities, in my bill, I was proposing that half the money goes to unfortunately, goes to addressing and preventing addiction. It's a serious thing. It's a public health problem. Making it two or three times worse is not an acceptable thing. But if we're going to do it, I think half the money should be going to that. I was going to provide another 25% of the money to schools for mental health and addiction work, because students in mental health crisis is serious. We don't have the funds to do it. We're not going to address it in a significant way. If we're going to allow something that's directly hitting a lot of high school, even middle school kids, we better put money into addressing that. And so anyhow, this bill is not something I'm saying, please vote this out of committee. The committee voted on another one earlier, and I'm saying if at some point you decide you want to move forward on sports betting, I would argue we should do it with strong regulations. And yes, they won't be as profitable as it could be, but it would be strong regulations to address the growth and problems that we are sure to see with this, because the other states have done it. And my one final comment, our committee hearing last month, we had three studies that came out last summer, one of which talked about an increase in domestic abuse in states that have legalized sports betting. Another one talked about how it has huge increases in bankruptcy, as much as 25% in the states within a couple of years after sports betting. And they can do this because each state legalized it at a different time, and you can measure before and after and when the increase came up. That's a huge increase, especially given the small number of people who have the gambling problems. And the third study was one talking about how this was not displacing other entertainment dollars. It was displacing savings. It was displacing other things and causing more people to be further behind in their debt. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm open to taking any questions, but I very much appreciate the committee's time. And given the fact that you did not choose to move the other bill out of committee, I'm fine with laying this bill on the table, but I just wanted to present it and make the case that if you are going to move this forward, we should do this. So thank you for your time.
I appreciate your testimony, Senator. I'm sorry, I almost called you Senator Klein. I said his name so many times today, but Senator Marty, do you have any one amendment? Okay.
We could, but I'm not planning to move the bill unless the committee would choose to do so, in which case
okay.
I have
not. With that, members, Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to lay Senate file number 978 on the table.
There's a motion before the committee. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Nay. The motion passes. Senator Marty, your bill has been laid on the table.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Marty. Members, thanks for a rather rapid wind-up to the day. Thank you for all your comments. Thanks for your putting up with me as chair this year. I appreciate that. And thanks to Senator Zhang for allowing me to do that today. So with that, nothing further on the agenda. We stand adjourned.